Welcome into the show, everybody. It's another week of Cairo Nights with your boys, Mace and Mike. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being a part of the show. If you want to talk to us, if you want to potentially have your thoughts broadcast on these Cairo radio airwaves, all you have to do is text the State Roofing text line 98973. It's literally that simple. Frank Shires is in here with us wearing it's not a Cougs shirt, Frank.
No. I'm going to have a lot of these, I suspect.
Uh-huh. If you're anything like G. Scott.
Yep.
Frank has a polo shirt of the college where his daughter will be attending.
University of North Florida, the Ospreys.
Yes.
Swoop, swoop.
Swoop, swoop? Is that it? Are you familiar with the Juggalo call of whoop, whoop?
No.
Because that is remarkably similar.
Oh, my.
Gotta hand it to Florida.
And I'm sure also popular in Florida.
Uh-huh. Listen, folks, we talked about it Friday, the City of Kent's Twitter account.
Yes.
And we reached out to City of Kent, and we said, you need to holler at us. And they hollered, and we hollered back. And so coming up at 7:30, ladies and gentlemen, it has happened. It's our interview with the City of Kent's Twitter account. Do not miss it. It's going to be something else. That I can promise. We're going to have some fun. If you missed it on Friday, check out City of Kent on Twitter. It is just a top tier, really amazing Twitter account, and so cool that it gives the city a personality, a presence on social media that's fun and engaging. It makes the leadership look cool because they let something like that happen. I'm all for it. Mike and I both, we're all for it. So we had to fan out a little bit and reach out to them, and they, whoever they are. They are anonymous. We do not know who runs this account. I have theories that it's the city itself come to life, but I have yet to have any evidence to support that. But it's coming up at 7:30. Don't miss it. It's going to be a good time. I think we should get right to it because as Frank covered it in his news, there was a shooting at CHOP early this morning. A 16-year-old boy was killed and a 14-year-old boy was wounded. And to talk to us about this, to maybe answer some questions, shed a little light on the story, is none other than Cairo Radio reporter Hannah Scott. Hello, Hannah.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
All righty. First question, I guess, is do we know who did the shooting?
Not officially. There is no official word from SPD on any suspects or who fired what at whom. We had Amari Salisbury on Seattle's Morning News this morning. He was there at the scene. He's a videographer with Converge Media, who's been up there consistently for the last month and was there when the shooting happened. He said it appeared to him that this white Jeep Cherokee had been driving around at Cal Anderson Park, through the park, made its way up towards 12th. It hit the barricade near Pike. And at some point there, it seemed that security at the CHOP maybe had fired. There was a lot of gunshots, I believe more than 15 in the very fast moments that this went down. But again, he was unsure as who maybe started the firing or how it all exactly went down. But it sounds like there may have been some CHOP security that fired.
Hannah, so the one thing that seems to be missing here, I think in some ways, is any sort of insight into how the mayor and the police chief are communicating, or are they communicating? What's going on there?
With one another or
yeah.
with the people? I would agree with you 100%. It seemed like they were there for a while in previous weeks, and that they were kind of teamed up. You know, you had the mayor talking about the Thelma and Louise moment. And then I don't know. It was clear to me, and I know for you, I'm sure, Mike, as someone who's covered city government here in Seattle, to see the chief come out, the SPD chief come out and talk at the CHOP at around 9 this morning. Her words, she was clearly frustrated as she wants this to end. Any questions about what the mayor had to say about it? She said, I'm sure she'd be happy to talk to you guys. I can tell you firsthand, I reached out. I've asked for anything from the mayor today, and not one word, nothing on Twitter, no response to my emails. So I don't know how they're communicating about this right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would suspect that with Chief Best having her own press conferences and not aligned with the mayor, that there might be a little bit of tension about what to do,
yeah.
if not a tremendous amount of tension about what to do and when to do it moving forward.
Absolutely. There's got to be tremendous tension. And I said it before Seattle Police Chief Best came out and spoke this morning. It was absolutely necessary for not just one, both of them to come out and speak about what happened with the second deadly shooting happening at this CHOP zone. I don't care what it's about. I don't care if it has nothing to do with the protesters. This is five people shot, I believe, in 10 days in or near this area. And that's a problem. The people who live there, the people who have businesses there, feel like it's completely, you know, it's lost control and they don't feel safe. Even those people who really supported the effort when it first started, it just seems like chaos and scary chaos at this point.
Yeah. Have you heard from the protesters? Do you know what they're saying out there?
It's always something different as far as what they're saying about the shooting. It is that it has nothing to do with them, that it's not anything related to them. They're not the reason for the violence. And that may very well be true. But my point has been is that I don't know that you can say with any certainty that this violence that's happened there over the last 10 days would be happening there if those demonstrators were not there, whether it's directly related to them or just the fact that people know there's no cops there.
There was a story in the Seattle Times about this today, and they talked about how the silver SUV with blood smeared on the door pulled up, and protesters said that it was one of the vehicles used to transport one of the teenagers to the hospital. A protester who said his name was River said that the car was his, and he saw two young men lying on the ground. They were covered in blood. And he drove one of the people on the ground to an ambulance waiting at 14th and Madison. But as the car approached, the ambulance drove away. Have you heard anything from either the fire department or the police department or medics or anything that talks about their reluctance to, if there are two teenagers bleeding on the ground, why not rush in?
Well, and I know that they cannot rush in without SPD first clearing the scene, and that had not happened. Now, as far as someone driving out to them, I don't know that there's necessarily a protocol for that. And if so, maybe they don't have one. Maybe that could explain that. I do know Harborview said this morning that the one victim was brought to them at around 3:15 in a private vehicle, and that at around 3:30, Harborview has said that the second victim, who was the 16-year-old who died, was in fact brought by Seattle medics. So I don't know how that went about. Chief Best didn't seem to know that this morning. She said presumably it was both of them brought by private vehicles, but again, Harborview is the only official word I've had.
Hannah, to turn it back toward the mayor's office, because it appears that that's sort of where a lot of the decision-making is happening right now. I think that the chief has made it pretty clear how quickly she'd like to get the Seattle Police Department back in the precinct. Is it conceivable, and I know we're just speculating here, but is it conceivable that there's no agreement even within the mayor's office about how to push ahead? Because the radio silence at this particular juncture seems pretty unusual, given the years I've been covering city government and state government here and in California.
No, exactly. And it's deafening, and it has been deafening, but especially today. And it is absolutely possible that there's no agreement inside city government. I know that the mayor, she shot off a series of tweets yesterday talking about the various discussions she's had with protest leaders and various groups, Black Lives Matter. Andre Taylor from Not This Time has been in on many of those discussions over the recent weeks, and she pointed to that as having made progress. She'll point to her proposed budget that came out last week, which includes that proposed $20 million cut to Seattle Police, which would, you know, presumably meet at least in some part the demands to defund SPD. She's also got the budget director looking at 20, 30, and 50% cuts for next year to SPD. She's looking at giving the properties to the community more quickly, even though, you know as well as I do, that's been years in the making, but the Fire Station 6 in the Central District and some other community properties that they want to give back to those communities. All of those things she pointed to, but she also stressed that more needed to be done. And then nothing. I mean, it was like five or six tweets in the thread she sent off last night, and then nothing today. So there's got to be a reason for that. And I honestly don't know how, if you're her press person or you're the mayor yourself, how you don't say something publicly today.
Right. Yeah, and it seems like for the council members who are directly in opposition to the mayor's policies, I mean, Teresa Mosqueda being among them, Shama Sawant being another, but actually it seems like they're getting more emboldened with the mayor's continued silence. Do you anticipate that this is foreshadowing what's going to be a pretty nasty fight? And also, are you hearing any rumors about anybody on council who may be positioning themselves to run against Durkin, who I think they are considering now, they kind of look at her as a weak mayor?
I think there's definitely that assumption among the council that they view her that way. I don't know. I've not heard anyone specifically that may run for mayor. I think you know, in theory, you could maybe put Lorena Gonzalez out there. I don't know. I think she has a different seat in mind maybe later down the line. I know that this is likely going to be a very ugly fight. I think it's already becoming such an ugly fight, especially when you look towards people like council members like Shama Sawant, who has missed not one opportunity to voice out. She was out yesterday. She's again talking about introducing articles of impeachment for the mayor continually. And she has lots of followers, lots of people who marched through her outside supposedly the mayor's house yesterday from Magnuson Park, talking about demanding the mayor's resignation. So I don't know what you do as mayor. I'm not a politician, but silence is just not going to be the winning ticket, I don't think.
So when you with what Chief Best has said so far, did you get the impression that they might have somebody as a possible suspect, or at least they're focused one direction, but they haven't made an arrest, or that they are completely, at zero for figuring out what exactly happened?
I think she probably knew more than she was saying, but I think it was early on in the investigation. And on top of that, she came out and she was so clearly frustrated because there's this code of silence. None of the people up there were being cooperative to talk about what they had saw. And then also, before any detectives or investigators got to that scene, I'm not exactly clear how long it took for them to get to the scene, but when they did get there, they went right to that Jeep Cherokee. They went in and it was clear. The very frustrated police chief said that already it had been rifled through by many, many people. And so all of that evidence is contaminated. And she said they didn't find what they would usually expect to find in a shooting or this type of situation. So I don't know exactly what she meant, but she was clearly frustrated by a lack of evidence and clearly frustrated that this is being allowed to go on. She called it irresponsible. She said enough is enough. She said it was a neighborhood under siege. There were multiple other phrases that she used that you can tell. She's just upset.
That is Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott. Hannah, thanks so much for talking to us tonight.
You bet, guys.
Keep up the great work. Hannah is amazing. She doesn't sleep. That's one thing I know about Hannah Scott. I know a lot of things about Hannah Scott, and one of them is she absolutely never sleeps. Can't appreciate her enough. Let's talk about Mississippi, shall we? The Mississippi.
Well, we haven't lately, so why not?
Yeah, why not? I pulled
a new state every day.
Yeah, I spun the wheel of stuff to talk about, and it landed on Mississippi. Strangely enough, the Mississippi flag is the only state flag in the United States that has the Confederate flag as part of its design. It's been there since 1894. And just yesterday, lawmakers in Mississippi voted to remove that emblem from the state flag. It passed in the House by a vote of 91-23, quickly followed by a 37-14 Senate vote. What it's going to do is basically call for this commission to be formed that would be in charge of a redesign. It will eliminate the Confederate symbol. It will keep the slogan, "In God We Trust," and then that design is going to be put on a November ballot. I found the governor's take to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, the governor is actually, I didn't get the impression the governor's a fan of this, but the governor will sign it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and which is great. That's actually, you know, sometimes as a guy, I actually have never had a problem with politicians who say, look, I'm not sure I agree with this, but it's clearly
the will of the people.
The will of the people. We need to move this ahead and at least move it into the design phase. It this isn't that it's not going to be changed immediately. It's going to be changed soon. But they bought themselves time by looking at a redesign, and hopefully they don't get so hung up on a redesign idea that they can't move this thing along quickly. Part of this, though, is not – some of it is for, I think, altruistic reasons, good ones,
mm-hmm.
Reasons to remove that symbol and what it represents from the flag. But some of it also is because there are actual, like, the SEC, I know, has been very angry about Confederate flag symbols. And the SEC, I mean, if you've ever spent any time in Arkansas, in Mississippi, in Alabama, in Florida, it is the land of college football being, in fact, the running joke being that the most popular sport down there is football, and the second most popular sport is spring football. and in this particular case, there has actually been NCAA pushback, conference pushback on having that flag. And so I think that got everyone's attention very, very quickly. But for whatever reason, I think it's a good move on the state's part.
I think it's a great move. I think the NCAA had a lot to do with it by saying they were going to keep championships out, right? That we're not going to have games here. You're going to lose out on that money. There's also Representative Philip Gunn. He's a Republican down there. I have a little clip of him saying that the flag should be a unifier.
The flag is a unifying banner that all people unite under. Ours has not served that purpose.
And that was echoed by the governor, too, a Republican governor, saying that the argument over the flag has become as divisive as the flag itself, and it's time to end it. If they send me a bill this weekend, I will sign it.
It seems pretty pragmatic. And again, for those who feel like they're walking away from their history, I actually think that they're doing a better job of not whitewashing their history.
You're getting more accurate lessons.
Yeah, that is what the whole push toward Confederate monuments was about. And if you don't believe me, you can go back and read the actual history. This is not even disputed that that's what it was about. You can decide that you want these monuments. You better rewrite the plaques if you're going to keep them, because essentially they were fighting to preserve slavery. It's hard to, and a variety of other things, but that was paramount, and that was actually in their Declaration of Independence. So you could call it what you like, but the fact is that moving away from this is a dynamite idea. It's the right thing to do by history. There is really no downside, and the people who get upset by it, well, I mean, I guess they can find a state with a Confederate flag to make them happy, but you know what? There are none.
And the American flag has been redesigned a bunch of times.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and really, maybe worry about that flag, too.
I mean, yeah, honestly. 206, Hannah is one of the best things to happen at Cairo. So knowledgeable and constantly digging for more. We got a Hannah Scott fan club.
Yeah,
well, you know, and I will sign me up.
I have been, you know, at least vice president of that for a long time.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. Coming up, guys, stay tuned. You know, we normally talk to Rachel Bell at 7:30, but we have a treat coming up next. Mike and I are going to interview the City of Kent Twitter account. You heard that correctly. The Twitter account for the City of Kent is coming on next. Stay tuned, everybody. It's Cairo Nights.
Previously on Cairo Nights.
We have in our midst an elite Twitter account.
It is the City of Kent. They will tweet out stuff like, "Have a good weekend, folks. If you're going to do anything bad, do it in Auburn." To our haters, three easy steps to get rid of us. One, unfollow us. Two, delete your account. And three, move to Auburn. Public service announcement. Just because the weather is nicer doesn't mean you should wear sandals if your feet look like they could swoop down and catch your dinner from the river. Your community thanks you.
There's a personality here that is very strong.
Yes.
I know that the City of Kent enjoys chicken nuggets and White Claws.
The City of Kent Twitter account has kind of caught fire. This is what makes your town interesting. A town that does not take itself too seriously, but still has the civic pride to have a good sense of humor.
Whoever is behind this, and I can only assume the city has come to life and is sentient now and is tweeting somehow.
I'm hoping, and I'm going to talk about this on Twitter with the City of Kent, because we are waiting. We are waiting to talk to you, City of Kent.
Well, wait no longer, Cairo Nights listener. I can talk. Because, Mike, you did indeed slide up into those DMs.
I did.
And conduct an interview with the City of Kent on Twitter. So, joining us now, for real, is the City of Kent Twitter account. City of Kent, you up for this? You feeling good?
Okay, sir. What are the questions? Let's do this.
That's awesome.
All right. First of all, we have to let everybody know that you've requested to stay anonymous. So to protect your identity, we're going to modulate your voice. Do you prefer soprano or baritone?
Oh, I like it. Baritone.
Serious. Okay. Now, I'm going to pause for a second. Chironites, obviously, we couldn't actually literally talk to a Twitter account. And whoever it is that runs it never got on the phone with us. Right, Mike?
Like it all happened on Twitter.
It all happened via text on Twitter. So the voice that you're hearing is actually an actor reading the transcript of the interview that Mike did over direct message.
All right. So first questions. What are the biggest misconceptions about Kent?
Biggest misconception about Kent is that we're either a farm town or a ghetto. But we're freaking amazing. First of all, look who picks Kent as a place they want to be. Amazon is a huge operation here. Jeff Bezos is one of the richest men in the world owning Amazon. And when he decided to open a rocket building company and employ 4,000 people, he picked Kent. Starbucks has less than 6 roasting plants in the entire world that make coffee. And one of them is right here in Kent. They pick us because we have an amazing community full of amazing people. We have diversity as the 10th most diverse county in the U.S., we come from all over the world, and we call Kent homes. Come check us out.
So you've been very vocal about your love of chicken nuggets. Why? Why nuggets?
Asking a person why a chicken nugget is like asking if they want to be rich and die famous. The answer is, why not? It doesn't matter if it's the beauty of the golden shell, the satisfying crunch, or the delicious tender treat down inside. The beauty of the nugget is also in the sauce. You know, you can dress a nugget up or down for any occasion. Backyard family time? Barbecue sauce. Treat on a hot day? Ranch. A black tie dinner? Sweet and sour, baby. It's a food for everyone and every occasion.
According to Wikipedia, quote, during and after the Great Depression, Kent was known as the lettuce capital of the world. Was that much lettuce the actual cause of the Depression?
When your parents told you to eat your veggies, did you ever get super excited about lettuce? Me neither. So imagine being surrounded by it more than any other place in the world. That would cause me some Great Depression as well. Wait, are we talking about an economic depression? I'm pretty sure it was an actual depression and caused by lettuce. But actually, we went from lettuce to launches. You know, rocket companies like Blue Origin are built and based in Kent, so we've advanced our game a bit since then.
So what does the Kent City Council think about your Twitter activity? Do they even know about it?
The council's fairly indifferent about our Twitter, mostly because they're bigger Facebook users than Twitter, honestly. Our Facebook's witty and funny, but not nearly as much as Twitter. Most of them love it and engage with us on Twitter, though. It was the mayor who I almost gave a heart attack. She's very professional, very mayoral, and thought I was crazy at first. But then the audience grew and grew and then grew, and the community actually started responding. So now we go places, and the first question we get is asking who runs our social media. 98% of our community loves it, and the other 2% must not like nuggets.
What about the other cities in the area? Are they jealous of Kent?
Other cities are jealous, and I hear about it all the time. A few asked us to collaborate. 2 cities asked me to talk smack about them to help build a base and followers, but they should be jealous. Kent is the best in the West. They should feel lucky just to be in the same region as us. We love them, but they're no Kent.
Speaking of that, you're always giving Auburn a hard time. My question is, does Fife feel left out?
Yeah, Fife and Sumner are both trying to get on our level. They clearly feel left out. It reminds me of my little brother. You know, I love you, but that doesn't mean we're going to hang out every day.
All right, well, thank you. That's our time. We really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here on Cairo Nights.
Thanks for having me. It's always good to meet a fan.
And like we haven't said it enough here, where is it that people can find you?
It's City of Kent on Twitter, at City of Kent.
Well, there we have it, Mike.
I'm even more impressed, and I'm even more curious who this person is.
Straight up, I can't be... This is not like a gag. We genuinely do not know who this person is.
Yeah.
This is like we should hang signs up on poles or in the post office.
But
like,
for all of you who were following our back and forth with City of Kent on Twitter on Friday, this is what we promised to you. And I would say, if you get a chance, tweet this conversation out too. Let's find out. Or maybe let's not. But let's encourage the City of Kent for having a dynamite sense of humor and a great social media presence.
It's like Banksy. Do you really want to know
who it
is?
At some point, you don't.
Right. Oh, yeah. Having some fun. Thank you, City of Kent. Thank you all for listening. We will be back, Mike and me, with some more Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's Cairo Nights. Mason, Mike. Happy Monday to you. A few texts guessing who the voice was, Mike. We have
Twitter account, as far as I know.
425 says, is that Lewis? 360 says, that hidden voice sounds like Tom Tagney. I don't know.
Neither.
I don't know. Yeah. Yep. How about you're 0 for 2? Two strikes. You get one more shot. Everybody's talking about it. I gotta say, okay. Sacha Baron Cohen was in Olympia. Allegedly, I mean, it was him, right? We all know it was Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah.
I don't think that's under.
Yeah. That's not under dispute at this point.
That's not under dispute. Sacha Baron Cohen, if you don't know, is a famous comedian and provocateur. And
prankster,
big time prankster. He rose to fame doing the Ali G show, in which he was basically an ignorant interviewer to everyone's delight. He is also Borat. He's probably his most famous character. And he apparently showed up in Olympia. There was this protest, a conservative, a right wing rally in Olympia. Organized by several people, March for Our Rights 3. There's the Washington 3 percenters. And he performed in costume as a racist bluegrass singer for about 8 minutes, it seems. There's some video of it. He is dressed in overalls and a straw hat. He's backed by a five-piece band. He sings about topics like Hillary Clinton, Dr. Fauci, Bill Gates, the World Health Organization. He says Wuhan flu and things like that. Here is a small clip of that event. Obama, what we gonna do? Inject him with the Wuhan flu. All right.
So do you want to know how this actually, what happened was
the group
was going to have this rally, and then they got contacted by what they were told was a conservative political action committee.
Yes. Back to Work USA.
Right. Offering to help out with the costs, put up a stage, book bands, do all that stuff. And they're like, that sounds great.
Sure.
And didn't realize who was actually behind that. So when he books the stage, he did actually book. There's a band there. Like, we had no idea. We just got asked to, it's a paying gig.
Like studio
so this,
musicians.
This band opens up, and then Sacha Baron Cohen, in disguise, gets up on stage with everyone. And apparently some folks were delighted by the song and sang along, and other folks actually immediately recognized, like, this isn't right.
Yeah.
You know, this is not
something's
something.
Up here.
Something's up here. But he had hired his own security force. So he prevented people from rushing the stage. The show, the brief show ended. But then he pops back up when people are being interviewed. They realize now at this point, people are starting to realize we're getting pranked here.
Mm-hmm.
He pops back up, apparently, according to one person on Twitter, while one of the organizers was getting interviewed about getting pranked, and he's there posing as a reporter in a different costume. That also hasn't been confirmed, but the photo looks a lot like him in disguise. Ugh. So we'll see if he did that as well. But they said essentially, one of the organizers said, "We got punked."
Yep. Alan Acosta, he was one of the organizers, says, "We got catfished." Matt Marshall, he's the founder of Washington 3%ers, this far-right group. He said, "We got had, I guess that's the best way to put it. We got punked."
Yeah.
This is not new for Sacha Baron Cohen. I happen to be a huge fan of Sacha Baron Cohen. I think he's brilliant and hilarious. And he's done this kind of thing before. This was a Borat sketch from many years ago. He was touring Middle America.
This is America thing.
Yeah, now that was the show. I remember him doing on the TV show, he sang an anti-Semitic song at a country bar in like deep, I don't know, Tennessee or somewhere in the American South. And then in his Borat movie, you remember he sang the Star Spangled Banner, what was supposed to be the star. No, it was the Kazakhstani national anthem before a rodeo.
Right.
And this is just on the long list of this kind of routine for him. He had that show. This is America? Who is America?
Something like that.
And I remember famously interviewed Dick Cheney and a bunch of people. And he's kind of moved on to this whole being in costume thing. He's always sort of dressed up.
Right.
But he's with the success of Borat.
Is the deception, right? And it's very difficult to do when you're that well known.
Yeah, exactly. So he's out there having some fun. I understand people getting ticked off or feeling like they had been had.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's a very natural reaction. Even though I don't necessarily agree with what was happening at this particular event, I understand why they would be upset, but they seem to have played it pretty cool. I mean, even the folks who, there's a guy who's running for city council or for government. He's a city council member, James Blair. And he was like, look, that people were singing along to that, whether or not they were, there legitimately, or he tossed the idea around that there may have been some paid people in the crowd, which doesn't really track for how Sacha Baron Cohen
generally
operates.
That's not the way he works, but who knows?
Right. You never know.
You never know.
But, I'd be a little upset. No one likes to be the subject of a joke or a prank.
Yeah. And he's not, he's not there to play fair.
Right.
That's not part of his MO.
No. He's coming in disguise. He has security.
He's coming in disguise and he's always trying to make somebody look stupid.
Right.
While trying to be sort of push the boundaries of acceptable humor, which has sort of been his MO since Ali G, he's started on the scene many years ago.
Right. I just like the guy. Maybe this is another season of his show.
He's got guts. I have a hard time
so
watching
much
it,
guts.
Actually. I have a hard time watching it.
And he's put in position. He puts himself in positions where he, no joke, could be killed.
Yes.
Very, very dangerous. But he does it anyway because he believes in what he's doing. So props to him. Props to you, Sacha Baron Cohen. Good looking out. We'll be back, folks. 8 o'clock hour. Cairo Nights comes up next. Stay tuned.